Okay, good morning if you're on the West Coast, and good afternoon if you're on the East Coast here. I'm Jim Kenny, content provider at optionprofessor.com. And just a quick background on myself, I'm a graduate of Boston College, and I've been in the investment arena here for many decades. I've conducted option learning seminars, not only through the country here, but internationally. And basically, I've explained the uses and the risks of all the different option strategies to people in a seminar form, live, and also in the last 5 or 10 years, more along the webinar way to go. Obviously, a lot easier than going to LAX and trying to get out of the Fort Lauderdale airport. So, bottom line is I've been educating people so they understand the uses and risks. How do you use options? You can use them for limited risk speculation. You can use them for hedging, where you try to protect a position with a limited risk hedge, and of course, cash flow. People like to write the options and basically create cash flow. And, in certain environments, that can be a very effective strategy as well. But the main thing is to explain the uses and risks so you know how the weapon works before you start shooting it off, right? Okay. Again, what I'm going to do today is I'm going to basically be sharing my opinions, my observations. I do have a weekly market update that I issue that people can get free of charge. I'll explain how to get that at the end of the broadcast. But, I'm going to give you my take on what I see happening. Let's talk about 2019. What the heck happened there? Well, we had a big rally after a big drop in 2018, right? We tanked the market at the fourth quarter of 2018. And then, of course, the Fed did a big pivot. And they went from draining reserves and reducing the balance sheet to exploding the balance sheet and lowering rates very aggressively. So obviously, that's a big pivot. And you don't be from Harvard or Boston College to figure out that that's going to probably send risk assets to the upside. And it certainly went to the upside, right? We went up 30% for the year. But if you really look at high to high, maybe about 10 or 15%, right? In other words, your high water mark from 2018 in 2019 was surpassed by, about 10% or so. And so while the headline number is very attractive, the reality of people's general equity, really probably doesn't match that because not many people were buying when it was crashing in December of 2018. They were putting their head under their pillow, hoping the rain would stop, right? So again, a good year. Now, let's figure out behind the curtain why that would be. Well, let's look at earnings and revenue. How were earnings and revenue? Well, they were flat. Okay, so you have flat earnings and revenue in 2019, yet you get the market going through the roof. Even Apple. Go look at the earnings and revenue on Apple and then try to correlate that to a doubling of price and $500 billion or more of market cap that's added. That's quite a disconnect, right? Now, what could have possibly, caused this? Well, you've got passive investing, right? People buy these ETFs, they buy these mutual funds, and a lot of people just sit on them, right? And they don't get out. And they don't get out because they're passive investing, right? And even the funds themselves and the ETFs themselves are not active sometimes. So there's not a whole lot of selling coming in when there's so much money in these, what they call passive investment, right? Years ago, obviously a lot more trading going on, a lot more moving of the money. I think that's a big factor. Number two is liquidity. For gosh sake, the Fed put in $400-500 billion of reserves since September. I mean, that just jumped the balance sheet up tremendously. At this pace, we're going to get new highs on the balance sheet March and April. So, I mean, whatever the, all that printing that was done to get us out of that 2008 debacle, we're going to be surpassing that number if it keeps up this way. And there are some people that think they're going to keep printing through March, April. Some people saying they're going to keep printing all the way through June. All right. So you got the Fed printing money and you got the world printing money. Most central banks have been cutting interest rates like mad and they're printing money like mad. So obviously it's this print as much as you can to keep everything inflated. Because what did I tell you in the beginning? The earnings and the revenues are not matching the movement. Okay. Now, the other thing is shorts. There was a ton of people shorting the market, right? And they had short positions on. Well, if you look at SPY and you look at the percent of short interest, you're going to find that short interest collapsed in the last 3 months of the year, which means what? Which means all those people were covering shorts. That's a tremendous amount of buying volume. Because when you're short the market, if you want to call off the dogs, you got to buy back a position. Now, if you're in the passive investment, you're not going to sell into that environment because it's higher highs every week, right? Well, you're not going to tell Santa Claus to go home, are you? So the bottom line is that there's no selling because of the passive investments. Everyone can see the Fed is flooding liquidity. They can see central banks are printing money like mad. So the fundamentals from that standpoint are great. And then the shorts have got to come out because they're losing their shirts. So the sellers, if there are any, they're going to raise the offer price as high high as possible until we exhaust that short covering. Well, short interest now has dropped down in the SPY to a level that we hadn't seen since October of 2018. Now, after October of 2018, you know, the market had a pretty rough racket. So the bottom line is that short interest, again, being so low, is another, you know, gauge that would indicate that we're extended up here. Now, also, you look at some of the moving averages. I think Apple's moving average is around 219 on a 200-day, and we were way over 300. It's 40% or better above its 200-day average. That's a pretty, you know, extended amount above its 200-day average. None of these things by themselves require the market to go back down, but they're little warning signals that everybody is saying we're in a new market, we're in a new economy, we're in a new everything, right? So the bottom line is that that's another factor. And the put-call ratio, some people think it's dated, some people think it's not accurate. But at any rate, the put-call ratio is extremely low as well. And the VIX has a 12 handle on it. And we are way up here at almost 3,300 on the S&P. So you add all these little things together, and what do you got? You got a situation where complacency is rampant, the prices are extremely high, the earnings have not been there, and it's a come line bet, as they say in Las Vegas, which means you're rolling dice and you're hoping to get a number. And sometimes if the number is seven, or, you know, seven, that number is not very good. And all the people who have money on that craps table get a big rake, and the big rake comes in and takes it all away. So what am I saying here? I'm saying the market looks great. And ever since we broke above 30.50, that was really the point where you should have been covering all your shorts if you had any, right? Because that was the breakout, 30.30, 30.50. Now, the thing here is since that time, I don't think we've had 2 weeks in a row where we didn't make new highs. So obviously, what's the old adage? You don't fight the tape and you don't fight the Fed, right? Now, both of those things have been going up ever since the breakout, right? So you're saying here, what we're saying here is that there's no reason to step in front of a freight train, right? But what you want to do up here, in my view, in my opinion, is look for a formation. A formation of what? Of exhaustion. I mean, come on. This thing's been running like, to date myself, Bob Hayes, who used to be a very good sprinter. At any rate, or Bolt, that's a new one, right? It's been running crazy, right? Run, without a lot of fundamentals behind it, which means what? Earnings and revenue. So what should you be looking for up here? In my view, a formation of which to do some hedging or some selling against. And what formation historically has been somewhat reasonable to look for? A high on a weekly basis surrounded by lower highs. And that sometimes is an indication of a turning point. So again, a lot of things are a little bit on the exhausted side. I mean, if this was a Porsche, you'd say, gosh, I got a big strong engine and this thing is firing on all cylinders. But you got to look at your gas gauge. And if you've been going for miles or 300 miles or whatever you're running, at some point you got to look at the gas tank and you got to say, you know, how much gas is here? Do I have to go refuel? And in my opinion, in my view, that's where investors should be looking right now for a sign from your gas tank that the thing's running out of the gas. And what sign would that be? There's many, but one might be a high surrounded by lower highs. So keep your eyes open for that. And then if you think we are going to pull back, and again, what could make it pull back? Well, we got earnings starting next week. We're going to start finding out if these companies are making anywhere near the kind of money that they're expecting. Because a lot of people are pricing in about a 10% jump in earnings this year. And a lot of very smart people think that number is way high. So a disappointment on earnings could also throw a little water on this thing. And we're going to start getting that next week. And supposedly for the fourth quarter, the earnings are supposed to be flat again, if not negative. So that's number one. Now, as we get further into the year, April, we'll have the Q1. Obviously, July, we'll have Q2. And again, the second half of the year, people are really hoping that the earnings kick in. But it'll be interesting to see, because the things that made earnings flat last year, you know, other than maybe a wealth effect, because we have seen a rise in people's net worths because of the rise in the market, maybe that will spur some more spending. But again, where are people spending the money? They're spending it at TGA Maxx. They're spending it at Ross. They're spending it at Target, okay? And so basically, you know, the companies like Bed Bath & Beyond or Kohl's or, you know, people like that who try to actually charge some money for things, you know, I mean, Ross and TGA Maxx, they go buy stuff at a big discount in a fire sale and then they resell it to us, right? So that's not a bad business, right? The bigger companies have inventories they're trying to get some cash out of, right? That's good for Ross and TGA Maxx. And then everybody wants a deal, so we get a deal. And so that's been the model for them, and that's worked very well because people, once they get low prices, don't really want to go back and pay high prices, right? Okay, so anyway, if you get that formation, or if you see something on your own, I'm sure you guys all have your own technical indicators. If you get something that says that we might be, at least petering out a little bit, then you could be looking at a situation where you could lighten up your load. This is just some general ideas. Lighten up your load by selling out some, or you could do some hedging using the options, which would be sell some calls out of the money, still stay in the market, but get some cash flow coming in to give you some downside protection. Do some collar strategies. You sell some calls out of the money. You take the premium. You buy some puts underneath. And now you got a parameter around your equity, meaning you have a ceiling because you sold a call, and you've got a floor because you bought a put. And if you take the premium out of the call and use it to buy the put, and the market stays between the parameters, then it's no harm, no foul, because Peter paid for Paul. Now, in addition to that, you could do married puts. I mean, if you made $50 on a stock and you donate $5 to a put, you're still up $45 if it keeps going. And if it starts tanking, at least you've got some insurance underneath, because I think everyone who's been around the block more than twice knows that we have a great market going on here, but there is unknowns out there. And of course, some of the unknowns that would be a factor would be three things that nobody thinks is going to happen. That's an economic slowdown, inflation coming back, and if the Fed stops adding all this liquidity. So I just gave you the trifecta of what could be problematic if things were to change. It was important to note that the U.S. dollar is still in the trading range that I've been talking about for the last year, which is 99 and change on the upside, 95 on the downside, right now the 97 handle. Somebody mentioned on TV, I think 4 years ago or something like that, it was still around the same price. So that's pretty stable currency for all the activity that's gone on in the last few years. There's no assurance that that's going to continue, because if we start blowing out the top end of the balance sheet and the federal budget deficit is growing huge in a late cycle environment, and you're talking about infrastructure wanting to get done, and they just passed a $1.4 trillion spending package, Washington doesn't seem like it's going to pull its purse strings in. And of course, that could be another factor that could disrupt markets if people start looking at that as a problem. So again, we've got a good deal going on here. You don't fight the tape, you don't fight the Fed, but you don't hit, you don't do the ostrich strategy where you put your head in the sand and hope to pull it out and find everybody's good. What you do is, at this point, because the car's been running so fast and so hot, you got to look at your gauges. The gauges are all in a overbought situation, pretty much across the board. So what should it tell you? Maybe it's not topping, but to say the word frothy is certainly not out of school. So when things are frothy, that could be a prelude to, obviously more froth, or it could be a prelude to obviously a pullback. So if you want to protect some of those gains, learn more about hedging, find out what the use and the risk is, the tax liability, and all the rest of the things you need to know, and then talk to your advisor and see what you want to do. All right. What I'd like to do now is I'd like to go, as I normally do, around the horn, basically. And a couple of other things that I'd like to just mention here, because it is the beginning of the year. The decade ahead, what is possibly the things to keep an eye on that could have huge growth stories? Well, from what I hear and read, it seems like things that are involved with the cloud and things that are involved with AI might be growth stories to keep an eye on, because those industries and those genres are already moving. And so it is something that could accelerate as opposed to you're trying to invent something. So, if you could keep an eye on stocks in that genre, that might be something to keep an eye on. And then I like to use the moving averages. If the moving averages are under what you own and they're rising, that is not a bad situation. And it's not you inventing the tape, it's you're following the tape. And following the tape generally works out better than trying to invent the tape, right? So those two things would be something that I would keep an eye on going into the new decade. And then how long will this printing go on? The central bank balance sheet in 2008 was around $3 trillion. Right now it's at $16 trillion. You get the idea of the expansion there? And that might be an explanation on why the gold has gotten legs last year, and maybe why the gold has a future, because obviously if you print that much paper, the currencies that are being printed, obviously you could have some jeopardy. Anybody who knows anything about historical currencies knows that at some point, like in the Weimar Republic, you cannot just print ad infinitum and have no consequence on the currency. Obviously, when that occurs is a big who knows. But the bottom line is people are getting more and more interested in some type of insurance on the currency. They could use the Bitcoin, but obviously it's such an unregulated thing. People are a little concerned. The gold, they can see it, they can feel it, and it's been around for centuries, right? And of course, the gold stocks have a bit, and if there is going to be a big move in the gold, generally they would participate in that with a little bit of a leverage situation, meaning, you know, if gold goes up a dollar, you might make more with the stocks because obviously there's factors in there that make it a little bit more leveraged. I'll give you a couple here to take a look at on the gold real quick. GDX is obviously the ETF that people like to look at on the gold shares. And you know, it had a big run up, as you can see, and then had a pullback and went sideways. So it broke out above 28 and now it pulled back to 28. So it'll be very interesting to see if it can hold this 28 area. And certainly if it breaks 30, that would be very, very strong. So keep an eye on the holding of the 28 area and look at it to see if it can break that 30. The other one is the junior miners, which some people think that if the gold really got going and people wanted to, you know, the bigger companies wanted to consolidate and get more assets, what they might look to do is buy the smaller companies. You know, sometimes that happens in a business, right? And so the juniors, as you can see, were more volatile. They went from 27 here, ballpark 28, up to 42. So that's a 50% jump in the price, right? And now it's pulled back around to this 38, 40 area. And so that is the neighborhood to see if it's interesting, if it'll hold. And then, of course, if it can get above 44, that would be very good. So, you know, if you think there could be consolidation in the industry or there could be some, corporate takeovers kind of situation, sometimes people look to the juniors because obviously smaller companies being bought out by bigger companies is not a new phenomenon, right? Okay, let's see. One other thing here real quick before we go around the horn is, you know, people are all got all these stocks, right? And the markets are way up. There's an interesting ETF that I heard about, BTAL. And what it is, it's an ETF that's kind of like a market, they call it a market neutral. It's actively traded. And I'm going to go back 10 years on it so you get a bigger perspective. And people are looking at this thing as a hedge, meaning this is generally long, short, low beta stocks, and it's short, high beta stocks. And basically, that would be something that would probably do better when the markets sell off, right? So let's take a look here. This is the 10-year history on it. And you can see in 2016, where we had a big drop, it went from the 18 area ballpark up to 24. And then, of course, markets got very good. And then this would go down if the market is very, very good. And then when the market got rough in 18, right, then this thing went up pretty darn high, right? And then in the last part of 2019 here, market had a big rally. So this thing came back down, but it's still holding this 22 number. And so people are talking that this is something that people would put on as a hedge. Okay. And basically that is the story on BTAL. Let's go back here and go back to big charts. And there you go. Back to big charts. There we go. All right. So that is an ETF that people use in order to hedge a portfolio by using part of the portfolio into something that is shorting high beta and buying low beta. I found that kind of interesting because, again, you know, when you diversify with something like that, you have something in your account that if the 3,300 went back to 3,000, it might be able to benefit, something like that. Okay, let's see what else I can go over here with you guys now. Let's take a look at the consumer, because the money flows as we started the year were really coming into four basic areas. And the four basic areas were consumer discretionary, small caps, semis, and emerging markets. Okay. So what stocks would be in the consumer discretionary? Well, you know, Chipotle would be one. And I'm going to go through some of these here. There's obviously many, but I'm just throwing out some ideas for you here. Chipotle obviously was on a big tear here. And again, it speaks for itself. It went from 500 up to 850, pulled back. Again, when it pulls back sometimes, it is, in my view, because the 200-day moving average is way under here and the prices are way up there. And sometimes it comes back to the mean, right? So again, this is another one where the moving average is probably down here and it could have a pullback. But as a consumer discretionary stock, you know, that is one of the ones that benefits. The other ones would be like Target and TJ Maxx. You know, we already talked about those. Target, everybody loves. But again, these things are all extended. And that's one of the problems at this point in time, putting new money to work. Because again, you're looking at Target here, at 130, 124. Okay. But this is one of the ones, and it pays a decent yield. 212 is not bad with money market where it is. And so you're getting a pretty good yield. But that's the one that on the consumer discretionary that's very popular. And then a couple of them had corrections, and now they're starting to turn. Let me show you the one, a couple of those. Starbucks. Okay, Starbucks, as you can see, had a nice big correction from the 100 area down to about 80. So that's a 20% correction. And now it's back on the bicycle a little bit, turning back up. A little rich on the PE ratio, but I mean, anywhere you go, they got these things all around town. And also, they seem to be pretty darn packed every time you go in. Plus, now they can buy, you know, you could do digital ordering. And the next, you know, obviously, the problem with that is you're in line at Starbucks and all these digital buyers keep coming in front of you to grab their stuff. Is that going to be a problem? I don't know. But more sales is more better. But again, a lot of times when you go in the store, you buy a lot of different items in there that you wouldn't buy, obviously, if you just put an order in online and you go pick it up. So it'll be interesting to see if the online ordering is actually going to goof up the business as much as it will to add. Because again, a lot of stuff you buy when you're in the store of Starbucks are highly marked up. Obviously, that's very good profits for them. The other one's Home Depot. And on Home Depot, again, let's take a look at it. You'll see it had a nice correction from 240 down to 210, 30 bucks, and now trying to get back on the bicycle a little bit as well. Again, the Lennar came out with some great earnings. That's a home builder. And so the money in real estate is still there. And so the consumer does have extra money, it appears. So, you know, if they want to fix up things. But every market has a cycle. And, you know, people don't, fix their houses up forever. And so I don't know if we're in a mature stage where, you know, everybody who is going to fix up their houses in the last 10 years have done it. And then the real estate market, while it's stable, is not on fire by any means. So maybe you don't have that many people that are flipping as much as they used to. And so the bottom line is that might be one of the problems here. There is a gap on the chart here, as you can see, between 230 something and about 238. Is the market going to try to make a run at that? That's possible. But again, it is consumer discretionary. And this is where the money's flowing now. As I said, if this market has a correction, it'll probably come out of these same areas. All right, the next one is coming into is the small caps, okay? And so let's look at a couple of small caps here and take a look and see what we can find. This is Trade Desk. Obviously, again, most of the markets that the money flows in the beginning of the year, okay, are markets that have already advanced. So you got to be careful of that. But again, this is where the money's flowing. And Trade Desk, as you can see, there's a good reason why it would be, because this thing has been pretty much a darn good stock all year. Had a big pullback, and then boom, got back up. You know, look at the technical picture. You know, when you have a market up here, obviously, it's way away from its moving average, right? So it makes it very, you know, risky up here because it's so extended. Boom. But if it comes down and you're in a bull market, that's when you buy it. Now, you might not want to buy it at 180 because why? Because, you know, it's falling. So you see the formation. Bounce back up to 220, back down. Back up to 220, back down. Once it broke above 220, that was your what? Buy signal. And look, if it gets way away from you, what does the market tend to do sometimes? Pull back to where it broke out from and then go back up again. That may be what's happening with the gold shares. They had a big run-up. They pulled back. They're pulling back pretty much closely at points were. And so if the gold shares like GDX and GDJ, if they can hold this correction and then get going again, that could be, again, not dissimilar to this chart formation where break out, they come back, test, and then boom. So keep an eye on that. All right. What else do we have here in the small cap area? Let's try AMED. All right. This is another one that obviously has just been going on and on and on. So what we're finding out is where the money's flowing in the beginning of this year is where it was flowing at the end of last year, right? So again, if it's going to not have any corrections, you know, these things are the ones that seem to have the legs. And if we are going to have a correction, they'll probably be the ones who have to give up some of these big gains that they've had. So again, I'm just explaining here where I'm the money flow basis some of the ETFs are showing. Two things that have never confirmed this big run-up are IWM, which is your Russell 2000, which topped out in 2018 at about 175 or so. And as you can see, even with the rally we've seen, which broke above the 160 level, which was good, we still have been unable to go into the 170s, 180 area, which is where those former highs are. So if this thing starts breaking under here, which would be about 163, I guess, maybe 163 ballpark, or certainly if it broke under 160, which is the breakout point, then obviously that would maybe be a signal that the overall market might be turning over as well. Now, if it does pull back and hold this 160, look at 160, boom, 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 boom. If it holds this 160 and then starts going again, maybe that's going to be the time it blows out the 167 and goes to the 170, 180 area. So monitor it as it pulls back. If it holds this 160, that's the breakout point. And if it holds the breakout point and starts taking off again, then you would use that area where the correction ended. Say it is 160, and you'd probably want to put your cut and run under 160 after it's been established. established as the pullback low and then try to ride the thing back up. The other thing that is not confirmed this big advance is the transports. Transports, again, topped out at about 11,700 and something back again in 2018. Has tried to get above this 11,000 area, got it above it a little bit, pulled back up to it now, down on Friday. So if we start taking out 10.8 and 10.4, and again, that means people are losing confidence in the moving of goods and services. And if they're losing confidence in that, that means the GDP number, rather than going to 3 or 4, might be stuck at 2 or less. And these earnings that are supposed to grow at 10% might be growing at between 0 and 5, and the market may not be priced for those type of numbers. And that's where the risk is as far as where the market is right now. And the fact that short covering was a significant proponent of the buying. And when short covering is exhausted and you need to find new people who want to buy 3,300 and 3,500 and 3,400 on the S&P, and they're not forced to do it because they're not in a losing position called a short. Again, when the market's rising, these shorts are losing. So they're going to be obviously compelled to buy. Well, after they're out of the market and the short interest and the put call ratio would indicate they are either out or close to it, then of course it's hard to find what? New people who want to play the game at the higher level. And then of course, if there's a reason like bad earnings, slower growth, inflation, scare, whatever, then you could have a situation where you have order imbalance, where all these people that are in the market start wanting to come out and the news is out to not buy. So now you got a lot of people wanting to come out, not many people want to come in, and then you can get some volatility on the downside. So this is what's happening, right, is that the market has been very firm. So like I told you about the car, you're running hot, but you're running fast and you're running strong. You got to keep a look at the gauges, and you're looking up here at something that would indicate an exhaustion. And of course, when you're making new highs every day, there's no sign of exhaustion at that point. Okay. So you need some price evidence, in my view, my opinion, before you can just step in front of a freight train, because people have been stepping in front of this freight train have lost a lot of money. Okay, let's see what else we can cover here and give you some more information on. Yeah, let's talk about international. Well, before we hit international, I'm going to go over some of the newcomers that have had up and down years this year and see if you think they might have some potential, and maybe some of the bad news is behind them because maybe they have reasonable businesses. This is Datadog, and as you can see, it came out, it went way down to 28, but it looks like it's trying to get back on the bicycle again. If these guys have reasonable business, then there could be a future to this thing. If we look at the moving averages, we might get an insight into what the price trend looks like. And we see 37 and 36. So you got the golden cross going to the upside. The market's above it. So that's not too shabby. And so, it looks like if we can hold this 35 number, that would be very good for this. And again, there was a very good story on it that made it go public. And so, keep an eye on that looking forward. The other one is CrowdStrike. And again, this is another one that came out and it got rocky. Look, it started out, went up to 100, came back down. Let's give you a little better chart here. And, it looks like it tried to base down here in the 45 area. And it looked like it's trying to get it. Now, 60 could be some trouble, but the volume is very high here. So what you could see is a low volume pullback to the breakout point, which is where 53 or something like that. And if it holds, right, and then it starts going again, this might be something that would be worthwhile to keep an eye on. Because again, these companies didn't go public because they had no story. They have a story. The question is valuation. And valuation is a rough racket. In other words, how much do you want to pay for the value of the share, right? And give you another one here. Lyft. A lot of people think Lyft has a better plan for profitability than Uber. And so you see here, it came out at 80 or something like that, or went to 80. And let's take a look at what Lyft is all about. Again, having some trouble. See, the low here was around 50. The highs here are around 50. So there's some trouble at 50. If we were to get above 50, I think that'd be very, very strong, because you can see here, couldn't get above 50, stopped here at 50. And now it's having some trouble there at 50 there. And so now it's trying to get back up. It might be a better buy at 53 than it is 46. Sometimes you want to buy strength and momentum as opposed to buying it before you actually see it, because the road to 60 or 70 has to take you through this 50 number, right? So if you're really playing it for a bigger gain, like 60 or 70 or 80, and there's a gap up there, then you want to do what? Then you want to make sure it can get through resistance before you put your dime down. And of course, course, Uber was one. These guys are having all kinds of issues that happen, you know, internationally, some of these countries, because I did travel to Italy, and some of the countries are not exactly embracing these people because there are people that are ingrained in the taxi business that don't want to hear that their rates are being slashed in half or more, or that they're losing all their business to the guy who is undercutting them. Also, this independent contractor thing is a factor where all these drivers are independent contractors. You know, there's a debate whether that's going to work or not. So there are some factors hitting this thing. But let's take a look at Uber and see what it looks like. Again, it's off a cliff, and now it has come back up the cliff. But again, similar to Lyft, there is some resistance here. You see the low there, and then the high. So, you know, getting above 35 and 37 and stuff like that would be very good for this stock. And then, of course, the breakout point seems like it was right around this 32. So, you know, pulling back towards 30, if it holds and takes off, might be interesting at that point. But, you know, again, these companies didn't go public because they have no story. They have a story. The question is some of them are having a problem explaining or guiding us to when they're going to be profitable. And that's why their volatility has been so high. Okay, what else did I have here? Yeah, that was about it. And then, of course, a lot of people are into Snap right now. Let's get the right symbol up there. All right. And Snap, there you go. Came out, went down. And if you can clear up this 17-18 area, there are some people thinking we could go to 20 to 25. And the momentum has turned up, but you'd have to be concerned with this triple top up here. So while it has done pretty good lately, 14 to 18 is decent percentage gain, right? It does seem to be a little bit stalled out right at a key number. Another stock that people have been talking about is in the car rental business. And again, another consumer discretionary, and that has done very good. But there are some people who think that there could be some corporate finance situations that could come into play here. And this is in Avis Budget Group Car Rental. And certainly it's been a heck of a mover here this year, bottoming out at 24 and it's up at 36. Again, though, resistance. A lot of this stuff, you know, has got to get legs through the resistance if it's really going to keep going. Otherwise, pullbacks are probably, you know, going to be occurring at some point. Now, international. Okay, we got the China deal going to be signed on Wednesday, right? I think Wednesday or Thursday. All right, so where in China could you look and maybe see some value? Well, the big names, of course, I'm going to hit real quick here. Hang on. Let's go to Baba. And let's just see what the charts look like on some of these. Well, look at Baba. Obviously, you know, it's buy the rumor, sell the fact maybe, huh? So we broke above. But here's the technical part. Watch. Here's your resistance right around the 180 mark. You see it goes to 190. What does it do? It comes back and tests the breakout point. And then once it took out 190, it was off to the races. And even when it took out 90, it came back and stood the point. So there's good evidence on how to read a chart a little bit that when it does break out, it sometimes comes back and tests the breakout point. But that thing, since 160, I'm sure the moving average is like this. So if you just follow the moving average on this thing, you've been able to participate in a very big gain. The situation here, though, is will it be a buy the rumor, sell the fact? And we'll have to see that. Certainly it's extended. I mean, 160 to 220 is a heck of a move for a large company. But you saw what happened to Apple, 150 to 300 and change. So, you know, anything can happen. And again, Apple didn't have any big revenue or earnings gains last year. So it's a total come line bet on Apple as they reevaluate it. See, that's the whole thing about valuations now. We're 18 to 20 on the PE ratio on the S&P 500. That's historically very high. So the valuations are high. The indicators are very hot. And to give you an idea, in 2007, right before we had a very big sell-off, the PE ratio was about 16. So again, 18 to 20 is a rich market. Now, it has to come down. That's why you have to wait to get some evidence, price formation, that exhaustion has occurred. And we just don't have that right this second. Okay, so Baba's on fire, as you can see. Let's see what else is going on in the Chinese space. You know, Baidu, they've been talking about as making a little bit of a comeback. Let's see if there's happening there. Baidu, obviously used to be 190, went down to as low as about 100, 95 or 100. Let's move this thing up here a little bit. And as you can see, it's starting to get out in the races. Now it is, again, it is filling in a gap, okay? And gaps get filled a lot. So when it was down here and it you know, it held 90, you know, obviously that gap came into play. Once it broke above 120, okay, that was kind of your buy signal above 120. And then 150 could be some resistance because that's the end of the gap. But this is one that obviously is trying to turn as the China deal will be announced. And, you know, hopefully that'll make the, you know, business environment a little bit better. All right, how about some ones that are behind the lift show, not as popular or talked about? Let's take a look at BILI. And these ones are not as advertised. guys, but as you can see, they've been pretty inactive here. This one here, BILI, has gone from 14 up to 24. Now it's pulling back. You know, this area around 20, it would be important for it to hold. But obviously, something's going on here because you're getting 11 million shares traded, and this company, you know, has shown some legs. So if it does pull back towards 18.20, it might not be a bad time to take a look at that for a longer-term situation. Another one that seems to be a little bit of interest here would be IQ. And IQ, again, very similar to BILI, had a big move, 16 to 24. And again, this 22 area where that top is right there might be something to keep an eye on, right? The 22 area. And then, of course, down at 20. So 22 to 20, if it can hold this thing and the story remains intact, might be very interesting. Again, look at the shares, 8 million shares traded. So, you know, people are interested a little bit there, huh? All right, so keep an eye on those this year because that might be something of a developing story as well. Let's see what else I've got here. And then on the all-time high list, you've got Microsoft, Lam Research, Adobe, Ross Stores, and Charter Communications. So those are some of the ones that you know, have just been going and going and going. So, you know, that's the story. The laggards. Would you like to talk about the laggards? What's lagging? Well, since 28,000 on the Dow Jones, we've had laggards in Walgreens and Boeing, of course. Now, Boeing, obviously, you know, their story, you know, got very obviously very ugly, and their emails are very ugly, yet the stock seems to be holding the 320 mark. So I would say this 320 area is a long second. Will it get broken or not? No. If you're trading off of these low areas, you know, it seems to be the line in the sand. Below that, I believe the number is more like 285. Again, this is a duopoly between these guys and Airbus, and so, you know, these MAX planes are sitting there, ready to be delivered, waiting on authorization from FAA and stuff. That could be further down the road than people expect, or it could be shorter. The tragedy that we saw in Iran obviously has been redirected towards the missile they sent, not a problem with the aircraft. And I don't know if that'll be a positive going into Monday, but it might be. And again, this again is a company that free cash flow and you know, a duopoly, and they've got a lot of orders to be filled. And obviously, their you know, their balance sheet and their orders have been goofed up big time by this situation. But again, down in this 320 area here, if it holds, and then of course right now getting above 345 would be very good as well. So the two numbers I would watch on Boeing: get above 345 and you could be back on the bicycle, and you get under 320, and then of course their problems might be more severe than has been discounted in the price. What other laggards do you have here? Well, Home Depot is a laggard, and we just saw the chart on that. That looks like it's trying to make a turn. Another one would be obviously the Russell and Chevron. Now again, oil had a big pop. I'll get into that in a second here because I'm going to go around the commodity sector, but this is a company that has been lagging, and it's testing the 52-week low at 104. CVX. I'm sorry, I got the wrong symbol up there. Okay. Yeah. So you got CVX, and as you can see here, it is testing the one, well, it's midway between the two. The high's been 126, and so this has been lagging, though. It's been lagging the market since 28,000 on the S&P. Obviously, people love the yield on these energy stocks, so that's why they pick them up. But of course, over time, some of these stocks can move. But, you know, again, oil's been kind of dead money. In fact, it went from one of the best performing sectors during one decade to the worst. So again, this is the energy sector, and it should be no surprise that it's lagging despite the run-up that we saw. Let's see if I got anything else here, or I'll start going to, let's go to the next area here, which is going to be on interest rates, okay? And in the interest rate area, I like to watch TLT. Now, don't kid yourself, you know, the printing of money by the Fed, calling it whatever they call it, it looks like it's QE to me because their balance sheet's going up, right? And again, that's a big amount of money to inject into the system. They're calling it to save the repo market. Maybe that's the case. It also just obviously put more money out there. But cutting the interest rates, you can see here, the bond market had a fantastic move last year. You know, longer term duration bonds, funds were up over 30% at one point. Now, their average returns are 6%, 5 to 6, 7%. If you see anything that on a 10-year basis is what, 5, 6, 6 or 7%, you know, overall return. And then the number says 30%. Well, you know, something weird's going on and weird doesn't last. That's very similar to the small caps. When that small cap in 2018, that IWM was going nuts. Again, if you looked at the 10-year record on these ETFs and 5-year records on these ETFs, you'd see numbers like what, 10 or 15%. And then you saw 37%. You know that that is extended. You know that that's frothy and it cannot, will not, and probably won't continue at that pace. So again, same thing last year with the bond funds. They were going nuts. Their returns were nuts. Look at what it did here. Went from 115 up to 150. That's ridiculous on a bond, right? So the bottom line is that's kind of looking like it could be a blow off, right? And since that time, we haven't seen that price ever since, right? So if we're going to get these big earnings things that they're talking about, and if inflation were to pick up because of wages increasing or, you know, whatever, or the dollar drops, and this thing starts taking out the 135 area, then I think higher interest rates this year, 2.5, 2.75 or better could even happen on the 10-year note, because nobody's ready for that. Nobody's expecting that. Up here, they're looking for zero interest rates. Everybody's on TV, zero interest rates, zero interest rates. Yeah, that hadn't happened. In fact, we went the other way. But if we get GDP numbers that are 1%, if we get things like earnings at 2 or 3%, if we get situations where unemployment looks like it's changing, because you know that unemployment number they gave you on Friday at 145, that was the last one for 2019. Do you know 2019's job growth was the slowest since 2011? So what is that telling me? It's telling me maybe the job market is getting a little bit frothy and getting a little bit extended and a little bit exhausted, right? Because you just went through a full year, 2019, and the job creation was the slowest since 2011. And earnings were flat to down and revenues were flat to down, essentially. So this run-up in the market, obviously heavily short cover and obviously a lot of optimism, right? Because of the flooding of the market with liquidity. And the passive people don't trade. They just sit there and let the ETF sit there, right? So again, that phenomenon that we saw last year, tremendous influx of liquidity, passive investment never doing anything, and a situation where the shorts were getting squeezed may not be repeatable this year. And if it's not repeatable this year, then you're not going to get the same kind of returns nowhere near that you saw last year. On average, though, the year after this kind of a move can give as much as 10% on the S&P. And that's where these 3,500 numbers are coming from. 3,200 times 10%, 3,600, something like that. That's where they're getting that number from. That doesn't mean we can't pull back to 3,100, 3,000 before that occurs. Again, what did we talk about earlier? Sometimes the market pulls back to the breakout point. Where's the breakout point? 3,000, 3,050. How are we going to get down there? A couple of disappointing reports, a couple of things change as far as geopolitical, and then all these passive investors start saying, hey, maybe I should take some profits up here. And then you know how it works. When everybody wants to do the one thing, everybody wants to buy here, you can see what happens, right? Order imbalance, short covering, no selling, boom, order imbalance, you get a big move. Same thing can happen on the other side. Don't kid yourself. If you've been around the block more than twice, you know that can happen, okay? So as far as interest rates are concerned, I don't think you can make a big call here at 138. Why? Because the support's around 135, and look at these were the highs, right? So there's a reason why it stopped here, right? And that's rates going up. So there's a reason why it stopped here at 135, right? So if it breaks under here, I think that's a significant tell that the rates may go higher. Conversely, you start breaking above 142.50, which is the recent highs, then that puts into 145 and 150. And then the lower interest rate play makes more sense. And it's probably coincided with disappointing GDP and earnings. Okay. So keep an eye on that. If you're an interest rate guy, you have money in the bond market, or you generally just want to get an idea of which way the flow of interest rates are. Right now, it's hard to tell, right in the middle. But there's your pressure points as far as I'm concerned. Okay. Turning towards the next area would be the U.S. dollar. And what's the dollar index telling me? I think I already told you earlier, so I'll just briefly go over it. It's in a range. And what's the range? 99 and change, 95. Where are you right now? 97.5. Where was it? Let's go back. The guy said it's been the same area ballpark for the last 5 years, right? Or 4 years. Let's see. In the last 4 years, what's the dollar index done? Here we go. Yeah. So 4 years ago, the dollar index 4 years ago is right here, you know, in this area. And where is it now? Right there. You had a run up there and a big drop here, but basically the middle area where it's been is it. So can you see if that was the high of the move of the dollar at 100, and this is kind of a head and shoulder that's developing, breaking the neckline at 95 and 94 would put the dollar on defense. And that would indicate maybe some of the commodity prices could start going up because the value of the currency has gone down. Again, again, the administration wants a weaker dollar for trade, right? And the Fed wants inflation. So that's what their stated feelings are. So, you know, sometimes they'll get exactly what they want. But right now, it's too hard to tell which way the dollar's going. It's smack in the middle. All right, next thing up is crude oil. Now, again, a lot of people are buying triple C debt. What does that mean? Again, that's a sign of frothiness as well. But a lot of the triple C debt, meaning junk bonds below Bs, is in energy. And so the play there is that if energy can go to 70 or 80, you're going to be able to get away with buying junk bonds in the Cs because these companies are not good companies on their balance sheet, the oil companies, you know, the ones that are issuing this debt. But what do they have is they have a commodity that if it goes to 65, 70, or 80, they'll have plenty of cash flow to pay the coupon and that type of thing. But if we went down to 45, 50, these guys don't generate that much free cash flow, and ergo, there could be problems and defaults on triple C debt. So that's the play here. If you're a believer, we're going to 65, 75, 80, then obviously the triple C debt might be a good deal because you're getting high yield. But right now at 59, it's a little dicey. And again, had a big run up because of the geopolitical problem. And then bam, how long did it take to come back down? But again, this area here in the 55, well, 50 obviously is the big line in the sand. If it breaks that, then you can stick a fork in it, looks like, right? But right around 55, in my view, is the real support. 53, 55, that's where the moving averages are, 53, 55. So it could be coming down to test that area. And then if you take out the 65 area, then 70 and 80 come into play. So keep an eye on it. Let the numbers dictate, your activities, because again, right now it's in the range. Could not take out that high, and now it's pulled back. We got to make sure it holds that lower level, and then we got to what? See if you can take out those resistance zones. It does look like it's giving you a saucer there a little bit, right? A little saucer there, possibly. So again, the idea that we could get a move up. And again, when we were down in the 50 area, I said that Aramco coming to the market, I thought would be bullish for oil because the Saudis don't want to try to sell their stock into the abyss, right? If we're down at $40 crude and they're trying to sell $2 trillion worth of common stock, they're not going to get a whole lot of buyers. In fact, they had a little bit of a problem in the beginning before oil took off a little bit. So again, they probably want to see the price of oil continue to be firm to higher so that everybody who jumped into this Aramco deal, you know, feel like they got a good deal. That's my view. That's my opinion. All right. Next one after that is going to be the gold and silver. And again, I'm looking at GDX. But, you know, I'll give you the overall price on gold, my opinion, my view. We broke out at 1350, right, earlier in last year, and we rammed up to 1580. Big move up in the gold. Again, in bull markets, the idea is to buy the drops, not buy the strain, right? So the bottom line is 1580 ran into the lows of 2012, and boom, it came back to the moving averages. Moving averages were at 12 and 1300, and we're at 1500. So it pulled back towards what? It pulled back towards 1450. My three support zones was 1450, 1400, and 1350. It hit the 1450, could have taken a bite out of it there, and now it's back up in the 1500s, right? So now it's pulling back from 1600, and the new support is between 1500 and 1550, which was somewhat in that neighborhood. So if it can hold this neighborhood here, take out 1600, then you're off to the races. Again, what would make gold rise? Inflation picks up, dollar drops. Those are two very good reasons. And of course, a currency concern. With the printing that's gone on around the world, remember central bank balance sheets used to be $3 trillion, now $16 trillion. Somebody could wake up and say, hey, listen, ink and paper, these guys could print as much as they want. And ergo, that might be why the gold itself. Newmont Mining is another one that people do like to see. And Newmont Mining is been doing pretty good. Okay. And another one, if you think the copper might be going someplace, your Freeport McMoRan is one that people like to take a look at. It dumped totally, as you can see, down to about, $5 or $10 a share? Yeah, $8 or $10 a share. And then it's trying to get above. If it can get above this 14, that would be very good. But this is one that would benefit is, say, China is going to be loading up on copper because they're trying to build around the world. These guys have investments in South America. They got investments in Africa. And if they want to build stuff, copper comes into play. What else do we got here? And last, okay, we've got the soybeans. And they're supposed to sign this deal, right? And we're supposed to get all this grain buying, right? Well, let's see what soybeans are telling us here. That'd be good, right, Jim? Hold on. Soybeans. Okay. And soybeans, again, having trouble at this 950 level. But it looks like the lows were put in, right? Down here at 8. Let me get the chart up real quick here. Yeah. Lows are put in at 8. Big rally. Come back down. 860. Come back up. Come back down. Don't take out 860. That's good. Made a higher high here. Higher high there. That's good. Gap here. Is this going to be a buy the rumor, sell the fact? Well, if you don't take out 960, it may want to come down to 9 and test that support and fill that gap. If it holds that area and then goes back up, it might be interesting. So keep an eye on it. But it could be a buy the rumor, sell the fact. We'll see that more when we get more price action this week. All right. And then basically, soybean oil was one that was very good last year. And it stalled out a little bit here. Again, if it's a buy the rumor, sell the fact, it may want to come down and fill this gap here. And the gap is right down around 32. One thing I'll leave you with on the commodity front, the Bloomberg Commodity Index is becoming a little bit more advertised. And Vanguard has come out with a commodity investment here. Symbol is VCMDX. So if you're looking to get exposure into the commodity sector, you could get the prospectus and information from Vanguard on it. And it came out at $25 a share. And basically, it is getting you exposed to metals, oil, and agriculture, and some softs. Softs means coffee, sugar, that kind of thing. All right? All right. So that's all I've got for you here today. We are at the top of the hour. I certainly gave you more than your fair share of information here today, but here's what I'd like to leave you with. If you would like to get a weekly update on things that I'm observing and my opinions on things, it's very easy. Just go to optionprofessor@gmail.com. That's optionprofessor@gmail.com. And each week I go through a number of different ideas and things that I see out there, my opinions, my observations, and you can get that weekly update free of charge. So again, I would like to thank everybody for being here, and again, remind you that you can get a hold of me at optionprofessor@gmail.com. I'm Jim Kenny. Have a great weekend, everybody. Got a big year ahead of us, and I look forward to hearing from you at the email account. Thanks a lot. And Anka, I'm throwing it back to you at the top of the hour.